Sargenti on 12 May 1998. Hal, could you begin by telling me a little bit about when and where you were born and your family background?
Okay, Arnold. I was born May 28th, 1934, to Lucille and Louis Sargenti. They had one child, my brother Robert, who was 2 years old at the time. We lived in the Borough Park section of Brooklyn, a house on 1020 47th Street. I guess my earliest memories of that period and that time were, I remember as a little boy seeing in the neighborhood on our street, many of the houses were boarded up and had been repossessed by the banks during the Depression. I remember my mother and father discussing and arguing about whether or not they should buy the house that we lived in, who was owned by a wealthy, at one time wealthy, a gentleman who had a manufacturing business in Boston where he manufactured shoes. He came to New York frequently and stayed at the apartment on the second floor. We lived on the first floor. It was a duplex. My parents did finally buy the house from the gentleman, and as a matter of fact, he left a great many things in it, including a couple of paintings which now hang in my living room over the fireplace, which are quite lovely. But I also remember a lot about the neighborhood. It was a neighborhood that mainly was Irish and Italian, mostly Italian. There were many families on the block, and they varied in their financial ability and educational level and so forth. I remember there were some very, very poor families that lived in our area, and many families that survived the Depression by eating a traditional Italian meal of pasta and beans. If you go to a good Italian restaurant now, you find that on the menu, but I can tell you back in the 30s and the 40s why that wasn't considered to be great food. It was considered to be subsistence kind of food, great in protein and cheap, and the people didn't have a lot of money to have meat every day. We, in the neighborhood, my mother was one of nine children, and her parents lived a couple of blocks away, as did two sisters. She had five sisters and four brothers. All of the sisters lived within walking distance of each other with their families. And my mother's mother and my grandfather lived on 11th Avenue and I think the address was something like 4706. And my aunt, Katie, and her children, who lived upstairs and two doors away, my aunt Angelina and her family lived on two floors of the house. It was interesting because I remember going to see almost every day. We went to see my grandmother and grandfather, who didn't speak any English at all. My grandfather was blind. And he always knew who he was talking to by feeling the heads of the children. We'd go up to him and say good morning, and he would put his hands on your head, and he would know who you were. The thing that I always remember about my grandfather was he was always dressed in a suit with a vest, with a gold watch in his chain, and a tie, every day at a starch collar, and he stood perfectly erect. He never slouched, he never bent, no matter how old he was. I've read many accounts since about the Italian man, particularly the man who had come to the country and so forth, and that erect posture was symbolic of the dignity and the respect that he kind of demanded from his children, because when these people came to this country, they didn't get a great deal of respect. But my grandmother And my grandfather sat outside every day, and they watched their grandchildren play on the stoops of their home. And then every day she made him his lunch. And I'll always remember he liked a good glass of wine and a loaf of stale Italian bread. He said it was good for your teeth, and occasionally we would have to eat that same bread. It was hard as a rock. But it was great fun, and so you were surrounded by family, and there was family everywhere, and so it made for a great childhood from that standpoint. There was a lot of love. I went to school, a public.
Can I just ask
yes.
you how? What do you know about your grandparents coming over here?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it was that's an interesting story, because it wasn't more than a few years ago that I visited the village in Italy that my grandparents were from. We had a great deal of difficulty in finding it. It's a village called San Fale, which is between Bari and Salerno, or Naples, or Positano. I guess I had been in Positano at one of the great hotels there, and we decided to find San Fale, and we took a car, hired a car, and we went there. And it's actually near a town of some size called Potenza, but San Fale is a village that's a couple of thousand years old. And when we got there, the car was too big to go through any of the streets. There was a church in the center of town. It was a very small village, and it was very high up, and there were marks for snow levels from various years. I always remember that. And it was amazing, because my grandmother made the trip from San Fale to Naples to board a boat, and for years we tried to find the passage and couldn't. My grandfather had come earlier with his oldest son, and they established themselves in the United States, as so many immigrant families did, made enough money to send for the rest of the family. But she made her way with the rest of the children, including my mother, who always said she was born in the United States, but when I finally did find the ship's manifest, my mother is listed without a name, just as sibling child or suckling child. And she was at the time, this was in September of 1903, they set sail from Naples. She was 6 months old. So they came to the United States. She traveled under her maiden name. That's why we couldn't find it. My grandmother's name was Conti, and her married name was Sisti. She traveled under her maiden name, so when we were looking under the Sisti name, we found nobody. But when we finally just went through ship after ship, and we saw Conti, we recognized that Maria Conti was indeed my grandmother, traveling under her maiden name. They got to the United States, to Ellis Island, and then they were faced with a very difficult decision. One of her sons had had polio. He was cured, but when they got to Ellis Island and they saw that he had polio, they refused to admit him. So she was faced with the decision to take the whole family back, or to send back her son and have him stay with her sister. They decided to send their son, whose name was Vito, back, and he later became very active in politics and was mayor of his town and so forth. And on my visit to Positano, I contacted his grandson, who spoke no English, and I was with Congressman Foglietta, now Ambassador to Italy, Foglietta, and Ambassador Foglietta explained to him in Italian that his cousin from New York was in Italy and wanted to see him. And at first he was totally mystified, because nobody had contacted this boy, although during the war, every member of the family sent his father clothing, food, whatever, his grandfather. But I also had a message for him that one of his grandfather's sisters had died, and he was entitled to one-eighth of her estate, about $50,000. So he was quite surprised and amazed, which was a bit of a fortune for him. But one child went back to Italy, stayed there, And I remember during many years, his brothers and so forth visited him after the war and during the war. There was a lot of support for him. So the family came, and it was very interesting. My grandfather, I guess, didn't believe too much in educating the women of the family, but he wanted all of his sons to be well educated, and certainly their children. That was a very important thing in our family, and a number of his sons were quite successful. As a matter of fact, one of his sons became a millionaire back in the 40s. He owned a chain of beautician shops and hair salons from New York to New Orleans, and he did all of the important actresses and whatnot. And I always remember as a young man, you'd be watching Dorothy Kilgallen, and somebody'd say, "Oh, your hair looks very nice," and she'd say, "Yes, I had my hair done at Anthony and Joseph's," and he'd get these free plugs on the air. The interesting part about that was he owned my grandmother's house, and he was very wealthy. And when he came to visit, we always hung around hoping he'd dispense a buck or two. But the interesting part was he never did. And we would have a big dinner in my grandmother's house, which was a typical house. You read a lot about this, but there was a kitchen in the basement. And the basement really was the family room in those days. The kitchen was really the family room because everybody congregated there. And when you visited, of course, you went there because they always served you coffee or food or something. But when my rich uncle came to visit, large dinners were held. All of the children came. And I remember he had a tan Chrysler New Yorker. And his wife, who was a very tall, striking blonde, had a fur coat. And my uncle had a camel hair coat with a brown fedora. And they came in, and of course, obviously signs of wealth compared to the rest of the family. And they played poker and so forth. And I used to hang around the table hoping that he would dispense some of his winnings to me. But as I recall, he never did that very often, if he ever did it at all. But he was highly successful and very wealthy, and one of the other sons became a major custom tailor and had a custom tailoring business in New York. He did diplomats and all sorts of dignitaries and had quite a successful business over the years.
Where was your father in the?
My father was. My father's family, he had two brothers, and my father's family came from Bari. The Sorgentis came from Bari. And my father worked for his brother, who had an electroplating shop. And that's actually very interesting because that's where I got my interest in chemistry and engineering. And they had a electroplating shop. The three brothers worked there. My father was kind of the manager of the shop. My uncle owned it. And again, my uncle was fairly wealthy. And I remember he had a lovely home in Flatbush, and we used to visit. And he, too, would visit Italy frequently. But what happened there was very interesting because my father and my uncles had built the business. They had a five-story building in Lower Manhattan on Walker Street, and everything was done batch. Well, after the war, my uncle's sons came back, and let me see who that is, Jamie. Mustn't hear it.
Let me just go back. You were talking initially about your maternal grandparents and their world and when they came over.
Mm-hmm.
But when did the paternal, when did the Sargentis arrive, and what was that?
Well, we know, I know very little about that, because they were both had died by the time I was, I never met them. So I didn't know very much about them, and...
But you think it was really you think it was your grandfather who came over?
Yes.
Yeah.
And so I was talking about my father, and they had built this business into a substantial business. And during the war, my father got paid a very low salary, and any special orders that came in, his brother would say, "Well, you know, take the money from that," and so forth. So when the children took over, after my uncle passed away, they decided that they wanted to modernize things.
Sure, I'm confused. Oh, I'm sorry. You're, the children,
of
the children
my
are
my father's brother.
Oh, okay.
Took over the business after the war. He had two sons and so forth, and a daughter.
Was he the oldest? Is this the oldest?
He was the oldest, and he had passed away.
And your own father and
my father was. My father and his brother worked for him.
And your was your father the youngest or the middle of these?
My father was the youngest. And to make a long story short, they decided to modernize the business and told my father he was old-fashioned and so forth. And they went to Monsanto, was pushing a continuous electroplating process. And so they put this place, this process in, borrowed a lot of money to do it. It was going to revolutionize the industry, and it never worked. And the company wound up in bankruptcy, and they lost the business completely. And at the time, I was in college, and I said to myself, boy, if I knew something about chemical engineering and so forth, I would have really been able to help out here and maybe solve this problem. So they lost that business, and of course there were no pensions or anything else, and so my father was very badly affected by that. During the war, my father was an inventor, and he loved to try things and new things and so forth. And during the war, I remember he received several presidential citations for work he had done inventing ways to electroplate bomb sites so that they didn't corrode in the hostile environment that they were in, and were able to maintain their accuracy. And so he did a lot of work. He wasn't in the army, but during the war. But he did a lot of work for the war effort. And I remember we never were able to find it, but I remember seeing a presidential citation that he received. So he was an inventive guy. He had a great sense of direction. He kind of took us everywhere as kids. We'd go on the trains and the trolleys and the buses. We never owned a car during those years. But we went to a lot of different places with my father. And always on holidays, it was interesting. We started early in the morning and visited his brothers, and then my wife, my mother's brothers, and the sisters were all in the neighborhood. But the ones that weren't, we had to track around for hours on public transportation to pay our respects. And we did that every single holiday. I'll always remember that. So that was kind of interesting, kind of fun. I went to school at, as I said, all public schools. Went to public school 160 in the neighborhood. You have to keep in mind that in our neighborhood, as Brooklyn and New York there are slugs of nationalities, and for instance, from 4th Avenue to 7th Avenue in Brooklyn, near the waterfront, that was a Scandinavian neighborhood. The Norwegians lived there, and other Scandinavians, they mainly were people who worked on the ships and the boats and so forth. You could tell the difference too, because in those neighborhoods, if there were four corners, there were four bars on them. Very heavy drinking, kind of rough and tough people. And then, like maybe from 10th Avenue to 13th Avenue, was the Italian neighborhood. And then from 13th Avenue on down to 20th Avenue was a Jewish neighborhood. I really don't ever know much about or learn much about Protestants because we never saw them. And, you know, we thought the church, there was one church when we were kids. And we never realized there were other churches, too. But that's, you know, Brooklyn had over 1 million Italians in a city of 3 million, an enormous population. And of course, the stores and so forth catered to the Italians. You know, pastry shops and Italian delicatessens. But anyway, I mentioned that because when I went to school, I always remember this one teacher. She was a very tall, which most Italian women weren't, and slender and very shapely, and she had very white skin. And her name was Mrs. Teakin, and she was Irish or something, or maybe a Protestant, I don't know. But I fell in love with Mrs. Teakin. I'll always remember that. I still remember her name, you know, 60 years later. So Mrs. Teakin made an impression on me. She liked me, and I liked her. And then from public school 160, I went to Pershing Junior High School, which is also walking distance from our house. I might add that we had in a public school, the grade school, elementary school, which is still there, by the way. And I heard the other day that my cousin's daughter is going to be sending her children there. They used to come home for lunch, and there was this one kid in the class I'll always remember. And whenever he came back in the afternoon, he slept. And the teacher finally asked his parents to come in, and they came in. They didn't speak any English, they were Italian, and she explained to them that the boy was always tired when in the afternoons he went to sleep. What they finally figured out was that when he went home, they didn't have milk for lunch, they had wine. And he drank the wine with everybody else, you know, it was the reason that he went to sleep. I remember when I was working as a good humor man, which I did for many years because the money was so good, I'd stop at my aunt's house in Bensonhurst, and she'd always make me lunch, but it never occurred to her to serve milk. She always served wine, and a lot of times it was just homemade wine. And but anyway, I remember that the teacher being mystified by why this little boy always slept in the afternoon after a nice lunch and a couple of glasses of wine. It was easily understood. So I went to Pershing Junior High School, and that was in the neighborhood. And we really we didn't travel much. I remember we went on one vacation to the Catskill Mountains, to the Villa Roma. It was a place where a lot of the Italians went. And that was the only time I was ever outside of New York until I graduated from college, which was very, very interesting. So graduating from college was a whole new adventure because I traveled and so forth extensively. And
had your mother and father presumably just met in the neighborhood?
Yeah, we never did. I never did understand. They met through mutual friends. You have to understand that when they first came here, they lived in what was the Italian ghetto. They lived in Greenwich Village on Sullivan Street, everybody knew everybody, and the people, as you know, congregated, that came from the same areas, kind of congregated. That's the way the system worked. And when I was in college, and my mother would say, "Well, where are you going?" I said, "I'm going to the village." She said, "Oh my God," she said, "you know, we worked so hard to get out of the village, and now you're going back to the village." They just didn't understand, you know.
Yeah.
And I said to her, I said, "Look, Mom," I said, "it's different than it was." She said, "It was never very nice." And she said, you know, there was all these tenements, big 4 or 5 story buildings and so forth. So, but today all the kids live there, and it's very chic. And it was when I was in college as well. So I think they met in that environment.
Do you know about the occupations your two grandfathers had when they were first in the States?
Well, my grandfather was an iron worker, my mother's father, and an ornamental iron worker, and I think his blindness came from welding and not using proper protection when he welded. My father's father, again, I don't know much about because he was dead when I was a young man. That side of the family, and unfortunately, there just isn't anybody left who can tell us more about it. That side of the family is not I don't know a lot about. It's interesting because Sorgenti is not a very common name, and there are relatively few names, Sorgenti. It was interesting, the Italian consul here one time told me, he said, and I don't know whether this is true or not, he said, but there's a clear division between northern and southern Italy. Most of the names that end in I, he said, are from people in northern Italy. He said, if you're driving through the streets in Milan, look at the shopkeepers, the names all end in I. And he said, both parents, grandparents and your mother's parents, the names end in I, which to me means that originally they were from the northern part and somehow moved down. He said Sisti, which was my mother's Sisti, Conti, and Sorgenti were the names we knew. He said Sisti particularly was an important family name in Italy. Relatively few Sorgentis. In the United States, there's only, I think, one other family, one or two other families. Some of them spell it with an E. We spelled ours with an I. And when I get the time, we're going to spend more time trying to track that back and understand a little bit more about it from that standpoint. I guess as a boy, some of the other memories were kind of interesting. My aunt Angelina, who lived two doors from my grandmother with her daughter who lived upstairs in the duplex, her husband died. I don't know what he did. Her husband died, and she had older children because she was one of the oldest. She passed away age 94, and was as spry and bright as she ever was. And she got an infection in the hospital and died. Otherwise, she would have been still living, I'm sure. But anyway, everybody in my mother's family lived into their 90s. My father's family, they died fairly young, in their 60s. But anyway, she had a son. It was clear that the family and she had decided that that son was going to college and going to medical school, and of course they didn't have any money. And I remember this very vividly. Every night, all of the sisters went to her house. They sat again. She had the kitchen in the basement. This was a basement, not a basement below ground, but it was, I remember, there were windows clearly above ground. It was a nice room. But after dinner had been cleared, the sisters all congregated, and there were four of them. The fifth one they didn't see too much. And they made artificial flowers. And they worked until 10 or 11 at night, producing these flowers to help their sister pay the tuition for her son who was in medical school. And it was very interesting because he later became the medical director of Charles Pfizer, a very important position and a very noted physician. And in Pfizer's formative years, he's still alive, wealthy, you know, retired many, many years ago. He's got to be today in his mid to late 80s. His name was Michael Carlozzi. And the interesting part of that was that the kids had a job too, and I was part of that. And late at night, we took these boxes of finished millinery goods and flowers, things for hats and so forth, and we brought them about 10 or 12 blocks away, where we left them in the doorway of the shop that had contracted with my aunt to make these. And when I look back at it and think about it, that probably was all illegal, because I don't think you were supposed to be working in your home on piece goods in those days, but people did what they had to do. And that was kind of an interesting thing, because the family congregated together, and it was clear that the objective was to make sure that the oldest son was educated, and that kind of established a tradition in the family. everybody was expected to go to college, and everybody did go to college. And we had lawyers and accountants and engineers and doctors and so forth.